You are listening to the Willpower Podcast. Welcome to the show. I am Will Holdren, and I talk with some of the most influential CEOs, entrepreneurial leaders, and thought leaders to try and reveal the secrets that has led to their success. I believe that with the right knowledge and mindset, you can do anything you set your mind to. So if you want to learn how to change your life for the better, if you want to learn how millionaires actually became wealthy, or if you want to develop and start your own business from the ground up with the right knowledge to help you, then you are in the right place because this is the Willpower Podcast. No way that we go is a one-way street. Nothing that we love is a one-day key. And if we gon' do it, we gon' do this now. And if we say we gonna, we gon' hold this now. How are we doing, everyone? My name is Will Holdren. I am the host of the Willpower Podcast. Today we have an incredible entrepreneur based out of the Tampa, Florida market, and his name is actually Tommy Whitehead. And Tommy is the CEO of Tomco Solutions. He's also the author of a book called Building Success, which you can see is in his background right there. And on top of that, he has been nominated for Top 40 Under 40 in the Tampa area, and was also a 2023 Philanthropist of the Year nominee. So it's an absolute honor to have him on here today. So first and foremost, Tommy, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks for being here. But I have a question for you, if that's not too forward.
Oh, let's hear it. Yep.
So did you name your podcast after yourself, or did you change your name to fit your podcast?
Good question. I actually changed my name after my podcast.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, that makes the most sense, right?
Yep. Gotta have something catchy up there so people can, you know, can connect the podcast to me. And that was the only way to do it, you know?
Yeah, Larry's podcast just didn't sound good, right?
Exactly. Well, I appreciate your time coming on here. And so starting out, I want to ask you a question that I pretty much ask all of my guests, which is basically, what makes you want to take time out of your hectic schedule to hop on podcasts like these and really just go out there and share your story so other people can learn about it?
Well, sharing my story, I mean, you hit it right there. I have met many, many entrepreneurs, young ones, old ones, everything in between, that have had problems with their own success, that they get down on themselves, that they fail and think they can never move forward. And I was one of those people. I really was. I mean, I was an individual that's fallen several times. I've had failures in my past, and I wanted to show other people that, hey, I failed and I still got back up and I moved forward, and it's doable and it's possible even in your absolute worst times. And it's a really cool message. And, you know, I just thought other people should hear it, and you're not alone. You're going to goof up. You're going to make mistakes, but it's okay. You'll get there.
Yep. Expect mistakes, right? Failure is just a part of being an entrepreneur. And so jumping into your story, kind of talk to me, what was your come up like? Were you always an entrepreneur? And what were some of those early failures that you were just talking about that you kind of had to go through before you found that glimpse of success?
So I came up pretty poor. Didn't know I was poor until I had hit a nicer school later on in middle school. And I went to a charter school. It was free for me, but a lot of rich kids went there, and I never knew I was poor. But you want to talk about one of my earliest entrepreneur failures, and it's a story in my book. You'll like this. So when I was a kid, probably like 5 or 6, I lived in the country, like way out nowhere, and we had a really long driveway. Not many cars would come by. I really wanted to go to Disney World. We didn't ever really have the opportunity, maybe once when we were younger. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sell lemonade at a lemonade stand. It's hot outside. It'll be great. And I see all the other kids on TV selling lemonade in the lemonade stands. This will be awesome. So I have a really long driveway, and I'm like, I can't run back to the house and keep making 1 gallon at a time, because this is going to be a very successful lemonade stand in my 6-year-old mind. So I go to the bathroom and I turn on the bathtub and I plug it up and I start scooping lemonade in there to build a really, really big batch of lemonade so I can serve the masses, right? Because that makes sense, doing stuff in large production. Exactly, it's right there. So then that way it's really fast. I can get it out to these crowds of people that are going to drive into the middle of nowhere to get this lemonade, right? My mother promptly came in and yelled at me and said, why are you wasting my lemonade? And my dreams were crushed. So my first economic endeavor destroyed. It was horrible. Yeah. But I've come a long way from there.
Yep, you've rebounded from that first journey.
I've rebounded. I've never successfully tackled lemonade since. Maybe it's a tragedy and I just can't. Maybe one day in my retirement I'll tackle lemonade again. Yeah. But no, so what it taught me is I'm the kind of guy that does things differently in that age. Didn't really do well for me. I started doing things differently as I went along, from being in accounting, from being in construction, to launching a capital company, to working with AI, I started doing them differently and it started getting more successful. So it takes time. And if I had given up when I failed then or several times after, I never would have been here today. I never would have been an author. I never been on your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad you are here. I'm glad those things happen, right? Because all part of that journey. And now here you are, on podcast, sharing your success story now to other people, helping, inspiring other people as well. So talk to me, how did you get started with Tomco? Why did you get into construction for the first place? How old were you at this point? Or how this business get kicked off?
Okay, so I was in my 20s. I did not want to be in construction, never thought I was going to be in construction. I was a director of finance and accounting, actually. I worked at mid and large scale hospitality operations. So imagine marinas, golf courses, condo hotels, hotel rooms, food and beverage operations, club memberships, tennis, spas, that kind of stuff. That was my level of expertise. And then in the accounting department, no less. So I was generating balance sheets, profit and loss statements, explaining expense statements to managers, doing that kind of stuff. Well, I had taken over a small resort. I helped them rebound and recover. However, they were still struggling a little bit due to the Great Depression and the BP oil spill that happened here in the 2010, 2011, something like that. And so I got let go. I was one of the highest paid employees, and they said, okay, we just got to cut payroll. So we'll start from the top and cut it out. Not too long after that, a colleague of mine from a prior resort called and says, hey, I'm working with this company, billion-dollar startup that is buying and flipping residential houses. It was the Great Depression. There was thousands and thousands of houses sitting just foreclosed on. We're buying them, we're flipping them, renting them. He's like, I've worked with you before in project management. You've helped me with all my job costing. I understand how things work. He's like, I think you'll be an ideal fit for this because nobody knows exactly what we're doing. This is a new form of renovation. Nobody knows exactly what we're doing. Come on board. You'll be great. I'll train you. And he did. And it was pretty good. And I went through in just a few years, a few thousand renovations, single family homes, doing all kinds of stuff from drug houses where they're tapping into live power mains before the meter, to abandoned animals, to people leaving their entire lives, to a hidden room that was used for a still to make liquor, biohazards, dead bodies, all kinds of crazy stuff. So in that short period of time, going through thousands of projects, I determined that I pretty darn good at project management. And that's kind of how I kicked off my own construction company and went down that path.
That's interesting. So you saw all the dead animals and stuff in there and said, you know what? This is something I
Yeah.
want to jump into.
That's exactly right. There are some smells in your life you will never forget.
Yeah.
Any parent knows one of those smells. That's a
Yep.
diaper.
Yep.
And any person in the construction industry that's had to recover a house, that's had a hoarder situation, they know that smell.
Yeah.
It's not something you forget ever.
Yeah. No, that's, and I love your story. It's really interesting to come up how you really got started in Tomco as well. What I love about that is you started before doing that in accounting, right? So you really had that business background, understanding how the finances work on entrepreneurship, right? For businesses. I think that is so important. I think a lot of people, they expect to just jump into entrepreneurship, but there's so many other routes you can take, right? You can go into the corporate world for a little bit, really understand financial stuff, balance sheets, spreadsheets, how the numbers work. And then later on, once you have that knowledge, then you can jump into your own business, kind of like what you do with Tomco, and just have a lot more confidence in growing it from that point forward.
Absolutely. I was interviewing a tax accountant or tax attorney, I'm sorry, this morning on my podcast, Tommy's Toolbox. And she works for a major international tax accounting firm. And she says, you don't have to be a billionaire to get tax advice, to get accounting advice. These small companies, these Main Street mom and pops that maybe make 50 grand, maybe make 100 grand a year in sales, and that's it, can drastically increase their financial position just by hiring these accountants, these tax attorneys. And they help you reduce your tax debt. They help you track your accounting. They help you figure out where your expenses are going. It's excellent. It's very necessary. I had that background, which was great. But for every small business, I've always told them, hey, you've gotta rely on people to do the things that you don't have the strength in. You can't do everything yourself. So get your proper tax accountant, get your proper tax attorney, get your bookkeeper or get your social media person. Whatever you're not good at, take care of it. It'll pay for itself.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be well-rounded. That's what you're talking about. And you can have the knowledge in these areas, but like you said, you don't want to be the one doing all the work in all the areas.
Yeah.
Not enough hours in the day.
Right. So
absolutely.
You got to build a good team around you, whether it's the attorney, the CPA, you know, the wealth manager, whatever that looks like. You guys got to have a good team around you for that. So talk to me about Tomco. When you first started it, obviously you jumped out of from being a W-2 employee for the first time, jumping into Tomco. So what was that? What was the biggest adjustment for you of actually becoming a business owner? And what were some of the major hurdles that you had to overcome early on in your business stage?
Well, for construction, well, any company really, cash flow is key. Construction especially. So when you get your first $30,000 check, that's a good day, right? That's a big day.
Not bad.
Yeah, not in construction. It's not really. Then you pay all your bills and you realize, oh, well, I still don't have enough money for rent.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. So making that transition from having that structured paycheck to going to not knowing what'll come in, and oh, if you have an off day, your sales suffer. You don't get to have an off day. Or if you have an off day, you need to plan for it. That was one of the biggest transitions. And then it got further to the fact of if you have an off day at work and you're W-2, nobody's losing their job. You're okay. The people that work for you are okay. If you have an off day and lose sales, if it's an off week, if it's an off month, all those families that work for you that depend on you are now in jeopardy. So it's not just your family. Now you're looking at other families. And that's a huge transition. You are now looking after many people, whether they're direct employees or subcontractors that depend on you for that business. And that's a massive transition. It's a massive thing to get into your head that, wow, you know, 15 people, 20 people, 100 people now rely on me to make sure things are flowing and I can't let them down. So maybe I'm having an off day and I don't feel like it. I get up and I go and I do because I know so many other people need me to.
Yeah. And that's definitely the pressure being the actual business owner, right? So it's a different level of responsibility. And so when it comes to that, what are some of the things you put in place, strategies, whatever, to kind of prepare for those down weeks? Because like they're going to happen, right? Business is a lot of ups and downs. So what are you doing to kind of prepare for those down moments that are going to come up eventually?
Well, we're doing all kinds of things. So one is construction is inevitable that it's going to go up and down. We know that, right? We have to, just like any other industry, go and knock on doors and find clients. We have to sell kitchens, baths, custom builds, disaster. We have to do that, right? To get down and past those days, I decided, why not become my own client? That'd be great, right? Just pay yourself. What are you talking about, Tommy? Well, I formed Tomco Capital Partners, an actual capital company. We're going through the SEC registration now, where we can solicit investments so that we can create our own projects. So when we see a viable construction project, rather than trying to go and sell it to somebody, all we're doing is asking accredited investors for capital and saying, hey, we're licensed contractors already. We don't need to go shop this. We know how much it's going to cost to do this project. We know what could go wrong. Now, we need you to invest $1 million, $100,000 at a time, and then we'll take care of all the project for you. So no more am I trying to knock on every single door and find 10 $50,000 projects. I can knock on one door and find one $500,000 investment. Then I can go and find the right project that's the easiest or the best value add. And so that's very different in that I still hold my retail operations where I'm still doing kitchens and baths and disasters and custom builds. But now I'll have a consistent workflow of, okay, we brought in $2 million this year. We got to deploy this $2 million in investment deals, and we're going to perform the construction on those investment deals. So I have a baseline. And then if we have a really good year and sell another $2 million in custom builds, awesome. If we have a really crap year and don't sell those and we're only selling a couple of kitchens, I still have my baseline and my staff's taken care of. Yeah. So it's a different way of looking at it. And there are very, very few contractors that are actually in the capital space. And I'm kind of driving in both lanes right now.
I love it. Yeah. Kind of exploring, right? So it's an interesting viewpoint. Obviously, you're kind of, sounds like you're pruning away the lower jobs, right? And just taking on a fewer big time jobs that'll pay you the same amount as 10 little ones, right? That take up 10 times as much time. You know, so
yeah,
it's definitely a good position. Now I'm a little confused of why do you need to raise capital going into these projects if you're the ones being hired to do the work, right? Because the one paying, you should be the one paying the capital, right? So how does that process work?
Well, that's a great question, right? So what typically happens in an investment deal? A capital company comes to you and you pay them capital. So they go out and find a deal. They find this building, they buy the building, they renovate the building. They have to hire a contractor to do that, don't they?
Okay.
To get that renovated, right? Well, what if I'm the one that also is finding the deal for them? What if I'm taking that middleman out, that purveyor that's just collecting the capital and hiring a construction partner? What if I take that middle part out completely And now I'm finding the capital and finding the project. So not only am I getting my construction revenue, I'm getting an asset or project management revenue fee as well.
Gotcha. So you're,
and I'm controlling the projects.
Yeah. So you're the one buying the asset and then doing the renovating and then flipping and selling it later on.
Exactly. Exactly. So taking off that extra margin that the investor would make and put it in my pocket, because I'm already doing a lion's share of the work by making sure the asset's repositioned in a construction sense. So now let me get the marketing people together to get it leased up or to get it market ready and then flip it or lease up and hold, whatever the investment strategy might be.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty rewarding feeling that you get to actually have more say in the project you're working in instead of chasing it. Then you're not bidding against yourself. You know, I if I'm going for a project and a developer says, hey, we need a contractor to do this, they're going to send it out to 6 contractors.
Right.
Well, if I am raising the capital and I'm generating the project, I'm not sending it to any of the contractors. I'm going to send it to my construction company because I can control the product and get the revenue from it. Still make the investors money. So it's kind of a cool way to control the entire life cycle of a product.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a very cool value stack, you know? And like I said, I don't think a lot of people are out there doing that, especially the contractors, the ones that are actually doing the rehab, actually owning the property. So that's a very interesting viewpoint. How many investors do you guys currently have at Tomco Capital Partners, or how do you keep growing that?
We're just starting up, and we're not disclosing how many investors we have at this point. We've had a lot of interest, and we've had a little bit of commitment at this point, but it's coming. We like to make sure that everything's properly registered with the SEC. We don't want to actually be soliciting actively for investments until the final dots are closed, because we do everything above board. A lot of companies out there say, oh, we're capital companies. And I had a meeting with one that was a contractor, and he says he's a capital company, and he didn't even know that there were SEC laws against advertising deals. And so I'm like, you know, that's kind of illegal, right? You don't want to get in trouble for that. And he's like, I had no idea. And I'm like, yeah. So what I say is I direct our people to our website that we don't have active deals we're advertising right now, but TomcoCapitalPartners.com is a great way to get in contact with us and see pending and upcoming deals.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, a lot of people that are raising money, if you go out and try to raise money from one person, like a friend or relative, you don't need to be licensed or anything like that in order to do that. But if you're trying to raise money from a group of people or bring in a lot of capital investors, then that's where you need to be SEC licensed. And
well, it gets a lot into accounting and regulatory stuff that and not being a CPA and not being an attorney. It's not stuff I would comment on specifically. Yeah. I will say if you're getting money from your family, it is different than getting money from the general public. You know, if you go to your mom, your uncle, your sister and say, hey, guys, can I do this? That's one way. That's one thing. It's a closely held relationship. But when you're going to ask the public for money or a stranger for money, it is very different. There are many, many different ways to do it. Some don't require the SEC and some do, but you really need an attorney and you really need an accountant to advise you for each specific instance. And I am neither of those.
Yeah. Just got to do your due diligence. Exactly.
Exactly.
So that's exciting. You're starting up your new capital company. So what are your main goals going forward? I mean, how's your marketing strategy going to change from what you've been doing previously to what you're going to do now, and kind of where do you see your company going in the next couple of years?
Well, I talk about this in my book a little bit, and we try to be a disruptor in the construction industry. So right now, I am a co-owner in a startup AI firm that is developing construction takeoff tools that can actually read plans and generate cost estimates, saving contractors tons and tons of time. All right. We are working on sales techniques where we can actually sit in a home and show you what your new kitchen or accessory dwelling unit or redesign is going to look like with virtual headsets. So imagine not just getting a flat piece of paper that this is what your kitchen's going to look like, but to be able to put on goggles and say, oh, that's what that's going to look like. Wow, I really hate that color, and change it right there. And get to see it and actually get to shop and feel in your own house. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to be forward thinking, hire people that are forward thinking, get sales staff that can connect better with clients. You know, we want to adapt and evolve in the construction industry. And our industry has been very, very slow to adapt to change. You typically don't see people that want to adapt new technology, and we definitely do. We see the value in that. It's not going to cut people's jobs. We're already losing 40% of the construction workforce in the next 5 years to retirement, and we don't have enough people to replace them. We have to find these more creative and innovative ways to sell construction products, to complete construction projects. And if we don't do that, then if you think it's expensive to build a house now, just wait for 5 years from now. It's going to be astronomical. So we're trying to place ourselves in that spot of let's do things differently. And let's get different results, better results, and do better for our clients.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think AI is going to be a really cool thing to see play out next couple of years, and how many, you know, different things are going to change, and how much money people can save with doing that. And it's just going to change the whole dynamic of a lot of industries, especially the construction industry, right? So it sounds like
it absolutely is
the forefront of that. So
yeah, it's going to take the mediocrity. It's going to take the counting numbers out. It's going to take the basic things out of our job, and so that we can spend more time being on a job site, spend more time with our clients. And it's going to do that in every industry, not just the construction industry. It's already revolutionizing marketing, and it's helping with accounting. There's a massive accountant shortage coming up as well. Yeah. And if it can take some of this minutia off our plates, so that we're using our brains for creative things instead of just adding numbers, it'll make a big difference. And that's what we're trying to do in the construction industry, is take that minutia off of our plate so that we can focus on more creative construction solutions.
Yeah. Now, is your AI company, is that officially set up yet, or is that still something that's going to be happening in the future?
No, it is set up. It's clearset.ai. And okay. We do have our construction tools under development already.
That's awesome. What's been the biggest challenge with the AI company and trying to just develop new technology? Because I think when you're the first one trying to do something in a new area, it's got to be a lot of challenges, right? So what's the hardest part about, you know, venturing the AI industry?
So, you know, one of the biggest challenges is people don't understand AI. Yeah. So it's a misconception, or everybody wants a piece of it. They just want AI and they don't know what they want AI for. They can't identify what AI is going to help them with. They just want a piece of AI. We just want you to come in and use AI in our company. For what? Yeah. Well, what do you good. Need it specifically? Well, yeah, sounds good. We can help. It's funny. I remember like 20 years ago when apps were first starting to come out on phones. You know, you look pretty young, so I'm not sure if you had that instance. But back in the day, you know, we couldn't even text message on phones, right? But when we started getting apps, I remember walking into the store and this older guy, come to think of it, probably what my age is now, says, "I don't know what I want with this phone, but I just want to make sure it has apps." He didn't even know what he wanted. He just knew the buzzword was apps. So our biggest challenge with AI right now is to teach people what it can do to identify those pain points and solve them, rather than just having people say, "I want AI," just because it's the cool buzzword of 2024.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people too look at AI and they're just scared, right? Because like I said, they just don't know anything about it, don't know how it works. They just see a couple movies where there's AI in the movie and AI takes over.
Yeah. Right? AI takes over the world. Yeah.
That's what they're basing their
knowledge on. Think of the Will Smith movie, iRobot, and they all take over the world. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No. The AI is not going to take over the world. It's going to take away the menial tasks that we toil and we hate doing. I mean, there's very few people that just get up in the morning and say, "Oh, I love my data entry job." I don't know anybody like that, do you? But AI is like, we don't care. You know, it doesn't care. Let it do the data entry. Let it do the scraping. Let it do the menial tasks so that we can get back to thinking, doing creative things, whether that's more creative ways to create copy, art, construction projects, new theorem on gravity, whatever that might be. AI can let us do that by taking these other menial tasks off our plate. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And there's something special about being able to go back, just being able to be creative, you know, like having time on your plate to be creative. I think that's what humans, as entrepreneurs, we're designed to do, right? We're designed to go from zero to one in a new industry. We're designed to be the rule breakers, right? Someone that can step into a new industry and just be a thought leader. And we're missing a lot of that right now. So AI could potentially help people get back into that creative mindset.
Yeah, I can remember in college, Facebook, when it first started, you had to have a .edu address. And so I was in college when Facebook started, and I thought, this is stupid. I got to go to my computer and scan a photo, because back then we didn't really have digital cameras. We had some, but they weren't like today. But I had to scan a photo and upload it and share it. And I'm like, who the hell is going to want this? This is garbage. Nobody is ever going to use Facebook. I don't even know why I have an account. And look at here we today. It's one of the best ad delivery systems that we have in the world. It is how billions of people communicate. But it took somebody being a disruptor, doing something that everybody else says, that's garbage, including myself, I'll admit, and doing it and taking it. And look at us. Who did you check your Facebook today? I know I did.
Yeah, now we're addicted to it, right? Now it's something in your daily schedule. So
yeah, I don't buy billboard space anymore. I buy Facebook ads. They're more effective. They communicate better. They show us what's going on. And that's how other people want to be communicated with.
Yeah.
So it's just somebody took something and became a disruptor. That's the way AI technology is going to be. That's what we're trying to do with construction. Let's think way outside the box. Let's, you know, get rid of the naysayers. You know, that's fine. Let them naysay all they want. And then in 20 years, they'll be the one saying, I thought it was stupid, but now I check my construction app every day. You know, I hope to be in that spot.
Right. I love it. I love it. And that's just being an innovator. And so I'm kind of curious, do you guys have any competition out there that are currently doing or trying to do the same things that you guys are doing that you know of? Or are you guys just it right now? Kind of like a blue ocean.
So in the spectrum of AI, there aren't hardly anybody in the construction industry. And I'm different. I'm a contractor working in the AI space versus an IT company trying to work in the construction space.
Right.
So I understand what the end user needs far better than most technological professionals do. In the construction space, we're trying to target and innovate with affordable housing. There are other firms out there that are trying to do that as well. And we want to be one of those lead innovators, helping get people off the streets, helping veterans, helping LGBT population, helping battered women, getting a kid's good night's sleep. And so we want to be innovators in that space, and we're going to do everything we can to push ourselves to be innovators in that space. And as far as the capital company goes, we want to be that capital company you invest in to make money, but that does good causes. So there are controversial companies out there or operations out there that make money, but people don't want to invest in a cigarette company anymore. This is like the 50s and 60s. You know, they don't, they wanted to be conscientious of where their money is going. And so we're trying to help them do that is, hey, you know, you can, instead of the stock market, you can invest with us. And what we're going to do is we're going to help you put the beds in place for all these children to sleep, for all these families, for the displaced refugees, for these veterans that we're not taking care of. That's what you get to do. And you get to make money doing it. We're not asking for a handout. We want to help you make money by helping other people. So we're hoping to be disruptors and innovative in that space as well.
Yeah. And that's fantastic, especially having that genuinely good purpose behind it. That's what really drives our world forward. So I think a lot of people need to be doing what you're doing and having a helping heart at first, you know? So I think that's extremely important. So I'm kind of curious, what's your process for going out there and finding capital partners? Are you going to like just warm market people, you know, are you advertising on Facebook, for instance, or what's your methodology behind that? Cause I think a lot of people try to raise money, but just have no idea how to do it. So I'm kind of curious, what's your strategy?
So I'm a connector. And if you're not familiar with a connector is, it's somebody that is very, very well connected with their community and able to connect other people. Many times my strategy isn't to go connect myself. It's to meet in various organizations and connect others. By connecting others, they always think of me and my operations. And then I have a new contact to reach out and let them know what I'm doing. And so my strategy is multifold. I have a public relations company that helps me locally get my brand and image out there, showcase the cool things we're doing. Do a lot of philanthropy work. I volunteer in multiple organizations. I formed multiple organizations to give money back to the community for nothing else other than I grew up poor. I would love to give back to other kids that are going up poor now and try to help break a poverty cycle. Those people that I'm helping become investors later on, or they're connected to, or they connect me to other investors or individuals that love the same causes. The biggest thing I'm doing is I give back to my community. I help other entrepreneurs. I engage with the community, and then they all want to help. The power of mentoring a young entrepreneur, somebody that's just out of college and trying to make it. And it's, you know, when you're in your early 20s out of college and you're bright eyed and then you hit the real world and you're like, wow, this is not what I thought. It gets very demoralizing. And I like to be there to say, hey, no, it's cool. We all went through this. This is what you could do. Those are your biggest advocates in life. These are your biggest advocates in your career when they come back. So you have to get out there and meet people and talk to people. And that is your best source of gaining capital. People want to do business with you if they like you. If they don't like you, they will not do business with you, even if it's good business, even if it makes them money. If they don't like you, they're not going to do it. So form relationships. Make meaningful relationships with people. And that's when you start getting your capital. And it's when you can start getting people helping you raise capital as well. Not just their capital, but other people bring their money to you because their friend says, hey, did you see Tommy just got $30,000 in shoes donated to these refugees, which is something we did this year, last year, which was amazing. It didn't cost me a dollar. It cost me a phone call, and it got a donation done. So now those people, when something happens, they're like, how can we help you, Tommy? I never asked them. All I did was make a connection, and they have been phenomenal connectors ever since for me. Yeah. So do your part, give back to the community, make meaningful connections, go to networking events, don't try to sell crap. Don't go act like a snake oil salesman that just try to sell your stuff. Go out, just meet people, listen to them, ask them what they do. You'd be surprised. People then come back to you and say, oh, what do you do, Will? And then you start to form a conversation and a bond, and it always works out.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because I think that's one of the most important underlying things of being an entrepreneur is building relationships, right? And have a helping hand at first, and generally want to have like a good relationship with someone else, right? Without having an ask attached to it. And that to me is a mark that's missed by so many people, like you were just talking about. They don't know how to form a proper relationship, right? And so if you can master that skill, you can really change your whole life and your business going forward.
Stop going in with what's in it for me and start going in it with giver's gain.
Yep, 100%. 100%. So I also want to know, because it sounds like you're doing so many things, right? You got your AI company, you got your capital company, you got Tomco Solutions. How do you make time, or how do you balance your home life and your business life? Like, how do you do that as an entrepreneur successfully?
I make 60 seconds every day for my husband. No, I'm joking. I power down times. We'll have dinners together where it's quiet. We'll have some evenings where we'll watch a movie. We try to do at least once a week where we're completely disconnected for 4 or 5, 6 hours. I'll take alternating weekends off. You know, we're building up to something big I want to talk to in a minute, but we're building up to something big with the book launch in June 1st. And so I'm working a lot of weekends lately, but then this upcoming weekend is one where I'm disconnecting. There's a million things I need to be doing, but I'm stopping and I'm spending time with my husband and my son. We're just going to do family stuff. And because that recharges you, there's always going to be one more thing you have to do. And you're never going to get that one more thing done. So you have to disconnect. You also have to trust others to do things. And that is the hardest part of being an entrepreneur. And I was just listening to an audiobook this morning in the car. And one of the things, it's like, stop holding on to everything like you're the only one that can do it. And that's really true. There were people in this planet before us. There'll be people in this planet after us. Yeah. And there are people that can answer the email as well as you can. There are people that can build the house as good as you can. You have to start delegating tasks and focusing on your core competencies and let other people take the other stuff. And once you do that, then it frees me up even more time to be like, I could take my son to a volunteer opportunity, which we went to today. And I didn't have the time for that, but I made the time for that because it was so important to me and to him. And the world did not crumble. The company didn't fall. I'm still here recording the podcast with you today.
Right. You're still alive, right? So, I mean,
still alive.
It did not end. Yeah. Now, I love that though. I think a lot of people just get in that work mode and don't really schedule time for, you know, personal time. You got to have that, right? Or else you're going to have a burnout and it's just going to happen, you know, but you have to schedule personal time, some downtime for you to relax and just kind of reset your batteries a little bit. You know,
That's it. And that's not just going out and getting drunk on the weekend. And, you know, we all have those times where sometimes we just want to drink a lot or do whatever. No, it's take that meaningful, find something that's fun to you. I liked karaoke. I think it's great. I don't go nearly enough, but it's a huge stress relief to me. Some people like to paint. You know, those paint and sit places are really, really cool. Go to the zoo, go to the aquarium, go hang out with your grandma, do whatever works for you. But if you take that time, you come back so rejuvenated. You come back ready to tackle new challenges. Don't kill yourself. It's only going to decrease your efficiency. You won't think clearly anymore. And that's a big, big problem with all entrepreneurs, but especially younger ones. You got to let go for a minute.
Yeah, no doubt. And so I want to switch gears and jump into your book here for a little bit here once we get to the end of this podcast. But building success, first of all, what made you want to take time out of your day and write this book, first of all? And what do you hope people can get out of reading your book?
So I am pretty good at talking to crowds, whether it's small networking events or larger presentations and formal speeches or one-on-one and mentoring people. And I realized I was repeating the same stories over and over again. And it really kind of clicked on with me. There was a young entrepreneur, young guy, well-educated, super, super intelligent. And he was asking for some advice and we were having dinner and wine. And I was giving him some of the advice and I looked at him and he looked at me and he was staring at me so intently with every word that I was saying. And I had a realization. I'm like, wow, this isn't the first time it happened, but it's the first time I realized it happened, that all my experiences have proven valuable and useful to other people, especially the failures, you know, and not being embarrassed to admit that I've failed before and that I've managed to pick myself up and recover it. Not being embarrassed to say that I grew up poor. I started realizing all these little stories, they had meaning to me. I knew, I just knew they had meaning to me and they had an entertainment value, but they had knowledge based in them. And now all of a sudden I'm turning 40 on June 1st and I have, you know, decades worth of experience and I've gone through more than a lot of people have gone through in their life at this point. And so I thought, you know, I got to put this together and I got to share this. And it's come out very well. It was just meant to kind of become, a legacy type thing, something that you can give your kid to read and to know a little bit better about yourself. And it actually turned in to something that I'm proud to say pretty good. And I've sent it to people that are not there just to blow smoke and tell me things are good. They give me genuine feedback and they've enjoyed the book. And that makes me humbled that my life is notable enough to be put in a book. And it's pretty cool. If I can help some other people, that's great. If they can spend a few bucks on my book and learn that I screwed up and here's how I fixed it, that I can learn this lesson, you can learn that lesson, and it saves you a year's worth of pain because you read something, that's awesome. That's what I want to do. I want to help other people. And so it was a great way to do that.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a good cause too. And so if people want to find your book, what's the best way for them to go out and find your book?
Super easy to go to TommyWhitehead.com. They can even scan this QR code right behind me and get right there. And there's pre-order links there on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The book is available for pre-order now. It launches on June 1st, so it'll be auto-shipped for you when you subscribe or download it automatically to your Kindle if you want to go ahead and grab that book now. There's also something really cool that I want to talk about. I decided to take Building Success one more step. From May 31st to June 2nd, we're holding the Building Success Summit here in Tampa. It's a three-day party. It's a three-day connector event full of things like vendor shows. It has got a Rocky Horror Picture Show live cast. It's got economic pitches for businesses. It's got vendor fairs. It's open bar. It's got yacht tours. It's got private dining experiences. And there's different experiences for everything. But it is designed to be a connector level event. It's not a conference. It's not where you go and sit and listen to boring speeches to try to make your life better. No, this is a place where you go and connect with other entrepreneurs, other professionals, athletes, influencers, other individuals that want to build their own success. And it's kind of just a celebration of my 40th birthday, of my book launch, and trying to help other people build their own success. And so that information is on TommyWhitehead.com as well, right next to the book link. And you can find all that, or you can go directly to it at BuildingSuccessEvent.com. And that is May 31st through June 2nd. And it's something you don't want to miss. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, sounds like a really cool event, you know? And like we're just talking about building relationships, how do you do that? It's going to events like that. You know, that's really ground zero, level one. Let's go to that and start from there. So I'm glad you brought that up. Before we hop off, is there anything else that you'd like to say? And if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to go about doing that?
Same website, TommyWhitehead.com. It has all my social links on that. I'm really, really big on LinkedIn, but it has all my social connects and a contact me box out there. So it's super, we make it super, super easy to get in touch with me. And I love hearing from people. So send me a connection, follow me on LinkedIn, post about something you read about the book or send some requests for advice. I'm cool with that. I love engaging with audience members and other entrepreneurs. And then as the capital company ramps up and you've got deals to talk about, bring those as well. It'd be great to work with people. It's not about just my success. It's about building success for everybody.
Absolutely. All right, guys, there you have it. Tommy Whitehead, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome. The pleasure is all mine. No way that we go is a one-way.